The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 12th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, Japan is still griping about U.S. beef, so what's new? The Director General of the WTO is in the United States this week, and senators from the Midwest are pointing fingers at the President and the House of Representatives. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in this half hour. We'll hear the insect news from the U of I's Pest Management Crop Development newsletter today. That's simply titled The Bulletin. And hey, don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this, a 479 and a half settlement price. They were up a half cent for the day. July wheat futures in Chicago at 373 and three quarters, a penny and a quarter higher, and September futures at 389 and a half were up a half. July corn futures, 247 and a half, up 5.5 cents. September corn at 259 and a half, up 5.75. And the Dease contract at 273 and a half were up 5.75. The March futures, 284 and a half, were up 5.5. The Chicago Board of Trade having a tough time this afternoon after what didn't look like a really busy day, but was an up day in the bean pit, getting all the settlement prices in. Those weren't in as of about a quarter of the hour. We do have the settlements for the highs, the lows, and the settlement prices for the beans. We'll give those to you now. July futures in the bean pit, a high price today of $6.05. They're low at $5.95. A settlement price 14 and a quarter higher at $6 even. August, $6.11 and a half. The high, the low at $2.50. Settlement price at $6.07 and a quarter. They were up $4.50. And September futures, $6.19. The high, the low at $10. Settlement price at $14.50, up 15 cents. November soybeans, $6.33 and a half. The high, the low at $24.75. A settlement price for the Noves at $6.29. They were up 13.5 cents. And the January futures, a 642.5 high, low at 635. Settlement price at 638.25. They were up 12 cents. The March contract up 11.75 at 645.5. And the May beans at 647.5 finished 10.5 higher for the day. Bean meal futures, July contract to 181.20. Settlement price, they were up 460 for the day. July bean oil at 25.30, up 44. From the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle, $108.22. They were down 37.5 for the day. June live cattle at 78.25, off 27.5. And the June lean hog settled at $73.52. They were up 57.5 on the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm told Kurt Kimmel is away this afternoon. He's with a dentist, not a place I'd prefer to be, but in his stead, we have from that office, I always want to call you Mr. Bates when I get to you, but from Bates Commodities we have.
Well, Mr. Bates was the founder, and I just took it over from him.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Tell us what happened in the bean pit for the day.
We basically had worries about weather. We had weather forecast for this in the coming weekend of warmer and drier. The hurricane that's going across the southeast is supposedly dragging moisture from us that wouldn't get here. Also, the worries about the July and August time frame of some forecasters saying that's going to be hotter and drier. So we had the beans made their high with about 20 minutes to go. So did the corn. And we couldn't quite hold the high, but we were up nicely 14 to 15 in those beans.
That's going to help out as the week goes on?
I think we're going to still be just a... Basically, what's the latest weather forecast? When the next one comes out, what's it saying? And I think we're that close to just being a straight weather one right now until we get closer to the 1st of the July, and we can maybe see some pattern that's not 30 to 60 days out.
It's kind of interesting to watch this on the charts as you look at it, that we have a drop last week, and suddenly a gap higher
Yeah. We're in about a 30-cent range on the beans from, on the new crop, $6 to $6.35, just back and forth. And if you look at that chart, we've been there numerous times in the past 3 months.
That's right. So are our expectations that this is sort of a consolidation sideways market until...
Still solid sideways until we really do get... news that, yeah, we're going to have bad weather or we're going to really have great weather.
Okay, and then what are you talking to producers about today on the phone? Anything exciting?
Basically, getting caught up on old sales, if you still have any old, and then on new sales, anytime you get over $6 on beans, how many do you have sold? How many do you have protected? Where should we be going to?
And on the corn side of the ledger?
Corn side, we were up 9 on the high today. Couldn't quite hold it either. Again, we made it high in the last 20. About 20, 25 minutes left, and we got partway back up to that old 87 high. But we had gone down so far, there was really fear Friday that we would drop a lot more. All we have to have is a little worry about weather, and boom, we were up 9 cents. I could easily see it being taken out before the 1st of July just on weather worries also.
So you're just going to hold still on corn at this point?
Hold still on corn. We've got guys mostly... probably 50% covered, maybe even 60% on new crop, either with sales and or puts protection, and thinking that we've got an opportunity on weather scares to go another 20 higher than the old high.
Yeah, expectations on a couple of things, and I'd like you maybe to discuss acreage, ethanol usage, and then potential for next year on prices.
Okay, ethanol usage continues to grow. We continue to get more plants online, so that continues to grow. I think we're going to use over 2 billion bushels this year for the first time ever and use more for ethanol than we do for exports. And then that was the ethanol part on, remember the other questions.
That's okay, acreage.
Acreage. We're expecting acreage to be at least 1 million more, maybe even more than that, maybe closer to 2. And I think industry is looking at probably at least a million and a half more, just from talking to the seed people of what they sold and how the planting progress was on corn.
If USDA comes out with something like 78 or raises it a couple hundred thousand acres or half a million as opposed to 750 or a million, million and a half, what's the upside potential?
I think we have to get through that $2.90 to $3 barrier, but I think with less acres and weather scares, that could happen. Doesn't mean we'll stay there, but we also have potential with good weather to have a tremendously higher bushel per acre number. I think they were still using an old lower number. So, I mean, we get to the next report or into the July report, those numbers could be higher. If you put 170 bushel on those acres, it's still a lot of bushels.
It was kind of interesting as we had talked after Commodity Week this past week. Darrell Good was in, and we had Mike Zuzulo along with us and a couple of others. And I think there was some agreement among them that what this market feels like to them is more like the 1970s than the mid-90s when we had a run-up, so that there might be a push-up and kind of a new plateau. Now, we talked about that in the mid-90s with Freedom to Farm and the Asian Tigers all coming on.
We talked about not having to worry about $3 corn anymore, meaning it would never be that low again.
That's right.
And now that we're pushing to go through it again, yeah, we're looking at maybe that's this 270 to 80 that we get to every year on the board, maybe that'll be a plateau now. But again, you have to, what is the acreage going to be next year? Are we going to plant more acres next year? And that was the question into next year. As you get December corn over $3 on the board, there are companies out there have their people 50% covered for 07. I don't know that you need to be that much, but we will, I think, plant more corn acres here. And South America will plant maybe fewer bean acres, and maybe we will too. So I think prices for both corn and beans out that far, 07, 08, have chances to really pay the producer well.
It kind of makes John Bondurant, who I think told us on Commodity Week earlier in the year that he put everything in beans down south this year, sound maybe a little more right, but maybe a year early. So we'll have to wait and see how he pans out on that one, I guess.
Well, I've been on that program 3 or 4 times with him, and he has he's got a very uncanny knack of knowing where things he thinks are going, and it's amazing how many times they get there.
Yeah, indeed it is. Anything else on the grain side, maybe the wheat that we haven't discussed?
The wheat, couldn't hold the gains it had early, and I think part of that's just harvest pressure. Guys, when they're harvesting, sell a certain amount of it, and I think once that's over, we'll see wheat maybe lead corn back up.
And a quick update on the livestock from the Mercantile Exchange.
Livestock. We had cattle today, mostly lower, but, I mean, they were mixed, down 20, up 20, and hogs continued to be mixed up and down. Not really a lot of there going on. We're kind of negative the cattle route right now just due to the weather and the time of year. Long-term, we're positive there. And hogs, they're worried about, do we have enough numbers and enough weight, which two weeks ago they were worried about too many hogs and too much weight.
It's amazing how quickly things can change, yes, depending on who's making the noise, I guess.
That's a good term, noise. There's a lot of noise around, and sometimes it's hard to sift out what needs to be sifted out.
Thanks much. We appreciate it, Pete.
Thank you.
Pete Manhart with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, filling in on this Monday afternoon for our regular analyst, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, who's away. We wish him the best of luck at the dentist office.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Jay Searles for this afternoon calls for mostly sunny skies across the two-state region. Some patches of clouds will show up in the south. Highs from around 72 in Chicago to upper 70s in the south. Tonight, generally clear skies over both states and cool. Lows from the lower 50s in Rockford to the mid-50s in southern Indiana around Columbia. And tomorrow, partly cloudy, warmer. Highs pushing through the lower 80s for the western part of Illinois, while 70s hang around in the eastern and parts of Illinois and Indiana as well. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a complete look at today's agricultural news. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
In agricultural news, a Japanese document given to U.S. senators says more procedural steps must be taken before Japan will agree to reopen its border to U.S. beef. Sometime after this Wednesday, Japan intends to conduct an audit of the 35 plants USDA has approved for shipping beef to Japan. There is no timeline for completion of the audit. Japan, like South Korea, wants to receive U.S. beef only from plants that meet its standards. Meanwhile, a top South Korean ag official says the U.S. needs to run more than a single slaughter line to separate U.S. from Canadian cattle, as well as separate lines for cattle under and over 30 months of age. WTO Director General Pascal Lamy is in the U.S. this week. He's holding meetings with U.S. trade groups in an attempt to jumpstart the Doha Round. Mark Lange is president and CEO of the National Cotton Council.
One of those will be with representatives of the commodity groups. Alan Helms, producer general from Clarkdale, Arkansas, is going to be at that meeting with Pascal LeMay, the chairman of the National Cotton Council. I think his meeting with the ag group stems directly from the letter to the president that was delivered a week ago by all these same groups that will be meeting with LeMay.
In that letter, leading U.S. ag and producer groups urged President Bush not to offer any more cuts in domestic farm programs without concessions on market access from Europe. Midwestern senators from both parties are blaming House members and the Bush administration for removing $4 billion in farm disaster aid from an emergency appropriations bill. The funds would have assisted producers suffering from drought, flooding, disease, and higher input costs. North Dakota Senator Byron Dorgan says, in his words, President Bush stiffed family farmers. And South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson says, in his words, the rejection is a raw deal. USDA Ag Secretary Mike Johanns says there will not be a one-size-fits-all approach to animal ID, especially across livestock species.
Our voluntary program today really recognizes that it is species specific. In other words, we recognize that how you do animal identification for poultry may be vastly different than how you do it for beef, how you do it for pork.
Johans says pork producers are among the most supportive for animal ID. Producers have had a premises ID system since the late 1980s. Meanwhile, a board member for the U.S. Animal ID Organization says premises registration, the first step toward a national system, is not happening fast enough. Bob Smith.
It's moving along at a slower pace than what we would like. Premises registration, of course, is something that we need to get done right away. It's one of the components of the NAIS. And right now there's about 10% of the premises that are registered, and our target established by USDA is to have 25% of those registered by January of 2007 and 70% by January of 2008.
And Smith says the beef industry needs to enhance its efforts to communicate the relationship between animal ID and U.S. beef exports.
No, I think we need to improve our public relations campaign. For example, we are currently not exporting any product to Japan while Canada is. The difference, they have animal ID in place and we don't. That in itself should be a nice incentive to producers to say, let's go ahead and get this done. And then a product that we're producing there on the farm, ranch, or coming out of the feedlot is going to be worth more.
Smith says much progress has been made toward finishing the technical work needed to have a functional national animal movement tracking database. Smith says USDOA is in discussion with USDA to manage that database. And a German-based company is marketing the first USDA-certified aflatoxin test for distiller's grain. DDGs are a byproduct from ethanol production. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, we're still just a bit behind in our collections this year. By June 30th, we'll need to have all the money in the bank that we operate on next fiscal year. If you haven't made your pledge of support to the ag programming here at WILL just yet, visit our website at WILLAG.org and hit pledge. That's up at the top of the page, or simply dial 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455 to pledge your financial support to the radio station that brings you ag programming 6 days a week. Well, farmers are battling a series of insects this summer. Up next, we'll hear a roundup from the latest edition of the University of Illinois Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin. An inventory of field crop insect issues in the Midwest. On June the 6th, extension entomologists from Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, and Wisconsin convened during a teleconference to share information about insect situations and issues in their eight respective states. A summary of the report suggested diversity of insect problems, but no widespread outbreaks. Some common themes were the appearance of threatening numbers of armyworms in corn, wheat, and pastures in some areas, declining reports of black cutworm infestations, large densities of bean leaf beetles in some areas, and late instar alfalfa weevils damaging alfalfa regrowing after the first harvest. Several entomologists noted that low rates of seed-applied insecticides, Reed Cruiser and Poncho, had not been effective against black cutworms this spring. On the soybean aphid, entomologists at the University of Minnesota found soybean aphids beginning to colonize V1 stage beans in several locations in the state, in the southwest, the south central, the southeast, and the northwest. Soybean aphids were found in a field near Ames, Iowa, too, that on May 31st, with as many as 40 aphids on one plant, although this density was not common. Kelly Tillman, entomologist at South Dakota State University, reported the first finding of soybean aphids on V1 stage soybeans in a field in eastern South Dakota on June the 6th. All of the reports indicate that these are the earliest observations of soybean aphids colonizing soybean fields in each of the respective states. So the big question is what these early observations of soybean aphids on small soybean plants mean for the probability for an outbreak in 2006. Well, to be honest, write the University of Illinois Extension entomologist in this past week's bulletin, No one has a very good answer. The truth of the matter, they say, is that weather and natural control usually play major roles in regulating soybean aphid populations. High temperatures and lots of predators will suppress the soybean aphid. On the other hand, cooler temperatures and low levels of predation established a potential for populations to explode. Only time and frequent observations will reveal the news, they say. The U of I entomologists say given the early sightings in Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota, it's probably not too soon for Illinois farmers to examine soybean fields for soybean aphids, at least in the northern counties. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
On this Monday afternoon, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Well, tell me about Champaign County, how things are going. I've seen on my way in and out from work quite a few guys that are in the field actually with a cultivator in this past week.
Yeah, I think they're out working the ground in between the rows, working on some weeds, a lot of guys spraying. Overall, corn looks to be in pretty good shape. Crop, otherwise, but I think we could definitely use some moisture in certain spots in the county.
Yeah, there are some areas that seem to be a bit uneven, especially for the corn. Although this last week, things really popped out of the ground.
Sure, I think that it was we got some beneficial hit and miss rains here in certain areas, but like I said, the ones we missed this weekend from a half to an inch and a half of rain forecasted kind of hurt a little bit, and I think that's what you saw in the markets today, trade reacting.
On the basis front, what's been the most interesting thing over the last week? Is it the river? Is it down in the Gulf or right here locally?
I would say it's probably right here locally. It's been steady here for the last couple of weeks. I don't anticipate it changing just because of the massive amount of ending stock that we are carrying through into the new crop. So basis is going to stay fairly steady here for the next few weeks at least.
And expectations as we head into harvest, if we have a normal crop year, will basis, which is wide at this point, will it widen out very much?
I would say it probably will lend to the widened side. I don't know how much, but I think if you look at the markets, beans, corn, wheat all have a decent amount of carry built into the market. If we have a normal crop, something's going to be eliminated versus space because there's not enough space to carry everything forward. So I don't anticipate any new crop bids getting very much narrower than they are right now.
That would be a seasonal trend. As we get into next spring, I'm going to ask you a question that you may or may not want to answer.
Correct? Sure.
Simply because you probably, nobody really knows, but what's the possibility that basis would get very narrow, potentially inverse, maybe next spring or possibly later into the year next year?
Well, I think it's going to be based on expectations of demand. You know, is ethanol going to fuel the boom to invert the market basis-wise demand? Is it really going to reduce our ending stock that fast? And that's a tough question to answer. I think the potential is pretty good to see a strong basis as we move into the following year, but a lot of it's going to be dictated on the American producer. Is he going to want to plant more corn than a normal 50-50 rotation? Is he going to be corn heavy? I think that's going to be the main determinant whether the basis gets firm and inverts, as you say, or not, and that's the bottom line.
And your bids for the day there at the Andersons?
233 cash corn. Fall is 249, 582 cash beans, 605 for fall, and 339 for new crop wheat.
Brian, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Monday afternoon. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the folks at the Chicago office of Chesapeake Energy. Your regional newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. State police will be cracking down on unsafe semi-trucks on Illinois highways this summer. IDOT is spending over $500,000 on the effort in the wake of a 20% rise in fatalities related to accidents involving semis last year. IDOT spokesman Mike Claffey says the money will mostly go towards overtime pay for officers as they catch speeders and inspect vehicles. He says beefed up inspections have already taken 42 unsafe semis off the road. The state of Illinois is launching a summer jobs program that's designed to help people from low-income families. The governor's Summer Youth Works Project will employ 1,100 Illinoisans between the ages of 16 and 22 from Chicago, Peoria, Rockford, and other communities. The Urbana City Council will consider establishing a sister city partnership with the Chinese city of Imei. Council members will receive information about the proposal at their Committee of the Whole meeting tonight. Alderman Dennis Roberts says the proposal comes from a U of I graduate student from Imei, which is in China's Sichuan province. Indiana will not need to add new telephone area codes as soon as previously thought. State regulators say slower growth and a saturation of cell phones means the state's six area codes will last a few more years. The 812 area code could run short of numbers first sometime in 2009. The VA hospital in Indianapolis will soon be caring for some wounded veterans from the Iraq War. The Veterans Administration plans to begin treating the military personnel at hospitals closer to their homes. The Rodebush VA Center will treat personnel from Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan. The American Medical Association is holding its annual meeting in Chicago this week. One of the measures under consideration by the group's delegates is a policy that states that doctors' direct involvement in prisoner interrogation is unethical and violates their oath to do no harm. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On this Monday afternoon, time now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Mark Russo joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I know you folks specialize in watching natural gas supplies, and I suppose our producers are probably interested to see how things are working through the pipelines and what your expectations for the fall might be. They'll give them an idea of what the price of anhydrous might be.
Well, certainly at this time we're at record levels from a supply standpoint of natural gas, and really the big reason for that is because of the warm winter that we saw, especially the record warmest January on record here since 1895, and now we're into the injection season, so with overall our lower withdrawals from storage over the winter due to the warm weather, now as we put more gas into storage, certainly at least going into this new injection season, we've had very, very high levels. And so that will continue here as we go through the next several months. And it looks like as we go into the fall and on to the winter, once we get to the new withdrawal season, which starts like in and around October 31st, November 1st, we're going to be here at a record high supply. So we don't really talk price at all here, Todd, but certainly with these record supplies right now, that certainly should limit any real significant upside on current prices. Now, still, a lot of that has to do with weather here over the next several months. Very, very hot summer conditions over a good portion of the country will result in high power generation, which now we have more natural gas being used for power. So that'll be one impact. And the other will be tropical systems. And if you get any kind of repeat or any storms moving through, like what we had last year in Texas, Louisiana, that's the core of U.S. Gulf energy operations. And if you cause any significant disruptions here, certainly that could cause some significant market movement.
All right, on to the weather now. And that is important information. I know producers' ears certainly perked up at some of those prognostications. Anyway, tell me about the weather in the Midwest, please.
Yeah, well, certainly summer is not procrastinating here as we're now heading towards the solstice and we're getting back into some good summer weather here as we go through this week across much of the Corn Belt. Temperatures will be on the increase, and by the late this week over the weekend, fairly hot temperatures across portions of the western Midwest. We don't see anything record-breaking at all, but highs getting into the mid-90s as far west as western Iowa, areas such as Nebraska. Also, with the above-normal temperatures, we will see somewhat limited rainfall, some activity popping up here and there. But overall, over the next 7 days, and even looks like even beyond that, generally it's a warmer-than-normal pattern and a drier-than-normal pattern.
Thanks much. We appreciate you being with us, Mark.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Monday afternoons. Hey, remember to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our pre-opening Mark Report, and that you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain reports, the weather right there on our website. Just go to WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.